The following program contains discussions around migration, which some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised.
You get to the section of immigration where they can't get past, and then you're the only one who is allowed to go on from that point. And it just dawned on me that I'm actually alone. I'm actually alone, and I'm being thrown into deep waters. Now, I'm not new to leaving the shores of Nigeria. I'm always going on holidays with family and stuff. But because of the nature of this journey, it felt very different. The pain of separation and the fear of leaving the familiar, and then confronted with the uncertainty ahead of me. Whatever happened from then on was whatever I made of it. And I think that is very scary. You're leaving home and you have to find a way to make this your new home.
Every year, thousands of people from all walks of life move around the world for many reasons. One of the topmost being in search of a better education and opportunities, and Ireland is no exception. Welcome to the first episode of Finding Home Away from Home, a 7-part documentary series that follows the lives of international students studying in Ireland. Each interviewee is a student or former student from a country with the highest number of educational immigrants to Ireland on their continent. Hello, my name is Blessing Kure, and I'll be your chauffeur for this journey. Buckle up! This documentary explores the impact of culture shock on these students' physical and psychosocial well-being, as well as academic performance as they familiarize with and integrate into the Irish community during their studies. To help you better understand this transitional experience, these students' journeys will be broken down into the 5 stages of culture shock, as identified by one of the foremost culture shock researchers, Peter Adler, in 1975. They are contact or honeymoon phase, disintegration phase, reintegration phase, autonomy phase, and reciprocal interdependence phase. In each stage, specific psychological, social, and cultural dynamics occur, and the extent to which they can overcome these plays a significant role in the success or failure of their integration. If you're a migrant, this can even help you spot what stage you're on. Stage 1. Honeymoon phase. Excitement and euphoria of having a new experience.
My name is Sami Oyekura, and I am from Nigeria, West Africa. I attended Southeastern Technological University, formerly known as Waterford Institute of Technology in Waterford.
I met with Samuel Yakura, who moved to Ireland in 2018 to get a master's in construction project management from the Waterford Institute of Technology, Waterford, now called the Southeast Technological University, Waterford. Samuel said his decision to study in Ireland was informed by several factors.
Ireland afforded me a cheaper option financially without compromising the educational standards. Secondly, Ireland had softer immigration policies as far as the chances of coming to study in the country and getting a visa and all that. Thirdly, I think Ireland has a very rich history of storytellers and export of writers and thespians. And I wanted to be in an environment where, even though I was pursuing my career as an engineer, I also wanted to be able to pursue opportunities as a writer as well and performer. Very importantly, Ireland had statistically a lower racism indices compared to other countries, compared to the likes of US and the UK.
Samuel is from Nigeria, and Nigeria has the highest number of enrollments into higher educational institutions in Ireland on the continent of Africa. There are always mixed feelings when leaving home. Samuel shares the range of emotions he experienced at the airport.
I think I felt both sad and excited at the same time. Sad because I was leaving family, obviously, because I was leaving stability, I was leaving everything that was familiar to me, but also very excited because of opportunities that I would be afforded and the prospect of furthering my education, becoming a global citizen. the pain of separation and the fear of leaving the familiar, and then confronted with also the uncertainty ahead of me.
In typical African fashion, an entire entourage of his family came with him to the airport to bid him goodbye.
Well, yeah, it was a full entourage. Nuclear family, some extended family as well. They were all talking about how they were going to come visit and all that. And, you know, it was a bit emotional, you know, hard guy. But
when asked if they had come to visit as promised, he said his siblings had, but his parents haven't, with hopes his parents visit before the end of the year. There is always a moment in our life that stays with us forever. Moments when time seems to stand still. For Samuel, the moment he had to say goodbye to his family was that moment.
I think that moment I was saying bye to my family. Like, it doesn't really dawn on you until that moment when you're actually leaving, and like, you get to the section of immigration where they can't get past, and then you're the only one who is allowed to go on from that point. And it just dawned on me that I'm actually alone, and I'm being thrown into deep waters. Now, I've always attended boarding school, even as a young lad, but this felt very different because there was a sense of permanence to it. Being a young chap going to boarding school, you know, after 3 months, you're coming back home. But in this case, I was literally going to become my own man, going to start life, taking all of the limited resources I was giving to create a future for myself, and that the ball was literally in my court, and whatever happened from then on was whatever I made of it. And I think that is very scary. It's like your intro to adulthood 101 with no cues or props or prep.
What does landing in a new country's airport feel like? How do you navigate? For Samuel, the air smelled fresh and the environment was unfamiliar. Not because it was his first time leaving Nigeria, but largely due to the nature of this particular trip.
Psychologically, it's very different. I'm not new to leaving the shores of Nigeria. I'm always going on holidays with family and stuff, but because of the nature of this journey, it felt very different. I wasn't coming as a visitor, as one who is going back home. This was like, you're leaving home and you have to find a way to make this your new home. And the anxiety that comes with being accepted and all of that, just all of that rush in that very moment. So I felt a bit anxious. I felt a bit nervous. I had to find a way to just get into survival mode. I had to find a way to keep my composure because I also didn't want to draw attention to myself. So I'm like, okay, you're already black amongst like 1,000 white people. So don't make it any more obvious. Don't embarrass yourself. You have to just observe, figure out how things are done, and get home safely. But I did my best to keep my composure. Getting out of the airport and trying to find my way to school was very challenging because you're learning on the go. You're trying to understand the road signs. You're trying to check directions on your phone. You're looking through emails that you were sent. You're looking at time. You're trying to make sure you're not breaking any rules. I was trying to get a cab. At the same time, I was also trying not to expend all the resources I had. I was like, okay, how do I make the best of the time and the money I have? If there's a way to spend €5 to get to where I'm going to, how do I make sure I don't end up spending €50, you know? So there was all of that going on. You're doing so much at the same time. I had to ask a lot of questions. It was also a very humbling experience. You have to calm down from your high horses and realize you don't know Jack and you can't assume anything. You have to ask questions. At every point, I was asking questions. Even when I knew what to do, just as a double check, I would always ask. So I think, yeah, I felt very humbled. I just kept my composure every step of the way until I was able to get to my hotel room, yeah.
The Irish student visa application processing takes between 4 to 8 weeks in Nigeria. His application was initially denied and upon appealing, it was granted. This delay meant resuming school a day before resumption deadline, and this had a ripple effect on his entire educational journey.
When I eventually arrived, I couldn't get accommodation on campus, and obviously there's a housing crisis, so I had to get a hotel. I think it was Travel Lodge that I got into, which was thankfully very close to the campus. So I quickly went in, lodged, because I needed to resume in school the next day. I remember going to Iceland, which was just opposite Travel Lodge, and there was no egusi soup or jollof rice, obviously. So I had to get like these very frozen-looking chicken wings, and I had to find a microwave, which the hotel didn't have. Ah, my God. But I had to eat anyways. It was challenging in the sense that I had to spend money, because getting accommodation would have cost me like, at the time, 300 euros a month. But here I was spending 50 euros a night. So in 6 days, I would have spent what I would have needed to spend for a month's accommodation on campus. So yeah, it was challenging financially. That was my experience anyways.
The $1 million question remains. Was all this effort worth it?
Thing I would say, seeing the result of all the hard work that I've put into my education and pursuing my career as an artist, I think seeing the fruit of that hard work has made me feel very grateful. It's just like the season of sowing for the farmer. It's not very exciting. You're having to spend hours in the library, or you're spending so much time studying. The learning curve is very steep. The educational system here is very student-led, at master's level at least, which is very different than what you have in Nigeria. And then as an artist as well, coming from Nigeria, where I was becoming quite established as a poet, as a performance poet, here I literally had to start from the scratch and then trying to work my way, trying to make connections, network. Starting to see the fruit of all of those investments really made me feel very grateful, almost like a harvest season. I remember getting a job was definitely one of those moments, getting a job in engineering firm, because it was during COVID and it was a nightmare getting a job at the time. And so when people were being laid off, I was getting a job as an immigrant. So definitely a standout moment. And then getting funding for my play as well in 2022, 2021 was also another moment that just made me feel like, oh, okay, yeah, you're doing something right.
Stage two, disintegration phase. Period of confusion and disorientation with growing awareness of cultural differences. Up until this point, Samuel had most of his education back in Nigeria. I asked him what stood out the most to him upon starting his educational journey in Ireland.
I think the Irish accent, because a lot of my lecturers were on the older side. They were like above 50. And what you find is the older they are, the more difficult it was for me to understand the accent. It's hard to explain, but it's easier to understand the accent of the younger generation of Irish people than it is for the older generation. Being in a classroom where your primary assignment is to listen and understand what you're being taught and not being able to do that was so frustrating. So I was learning the accent and I was learning what I was being taught at the same time. That was just very challenging. I found myself so many times recording lectures and going back home to replay so I could pick certain things that were being said in the classroom. That was definitely a culture shock. Like, I'm like, why am I having a struggle understanding the person who is speaking? I've never been put in this situation before. And then having to do that every other day. But over time, I think your ear palate adjusts to the phonetics of, you know, the old Irish lecture. And that was what happened over time. The teaching and assessment methods were good because you already know that at master's level, like, it is going to be student-led. You're not expected to be taught, so to say. So I think already setting my expectations made me understand what I was going to experience, you know, while studying. What helped as well was the access to resources to help you study. Having good, strong Wi-Fi in the library was a culture shock. I mean, the access to resources here in school was, while I was studying, was ridiculous. Like, You have peer-reviewed materials. You have a library that is functional. You have books available to your wide resource, a database with literally anything you can go in and type. It just makes your research experience a lot easier. The access to resource to help you study is very helpful, I think. What I found challenging was having to collaborate with other students when it came to like group assignments and things like that. That was the greatest challenge. So it wasn't so much about the structure of the system or the school itself, but having to collaborate with other students from different parts of the world. Some who weren't as versatile in the English language as you were, and having to manage that as a weakness and covering for that in group assignments, having to deal with difficult people and still making sure that you guys get the job done because you're going to be rated as a group and not individually. So navigating all of that, having to find people's skills that you never knew you had, having to be patient, having to work with all of the deadlines, having to go to people's houses to meet, dealing with the disappointment from people who are not serious in your class, but then you needed to make a first class, you know, just all of those challenges, yeah.
Samuel's most shocking realizations or culture shocks ranged from the spellings of traditional Irish names versus their pronunciations to traffic rule compliance and the absence of spicy pepper in meals.
Name spelling is definitely one of my biggest culture shocks. Just the fact that the way names are spelled is very different from the way they're being pronounced. Definitely one. Siobhan. S-I-O-B-H-A-N. Siobhan. Quiver. C-A-O-I-M-H. What is going on here, lads? You know, another culture shock is the orderliness on the road. The road signs, the fact that people obliged to road signs, to traffic signs, having a bus lane, a dedicated bus lane, a dedicated cycle lane, a dedicated car lane. Oh my God. Yeah, culture shock. In Nigeria, first of all, you don't even have white paint on the road to start with, to even say that you have three lanes. You just have tar, porridge, and that's it. And it's like everybody vibes. So I think, yeah, that level of information on the road was definitely a culture shock. Driving on the other side of the road as well, a bit of a culture shock. Like generally, the difficulty with finding Nigerian food, ingredients, yeah, pepper especially. I think the access to that has really improved. I mean, I'm talking 2018, like, it was difficult, especially in Waterford. It was very difficult then. Dublin is obviously a bigger city. In Waterford, we probably had, in the whole of Waterford, you probably have 2-3 African restaurants. Another culture shock was pepper, finding hot pepper. Like you'd go to a restaurant and you'd ask, oh, spicy, no spicy, spicy. And they give you sweet chili. And I'm like, no, I mean spicy, like very, very spicy. And that was the best they could give me, sweet chili. So I was like, so I literally started carrying yaji. For context, yaji is a Nigerian flavored dry ground pepper in powdery form. So I literally started carrying that about because, yeah, I need spice in my life. Again, when you're visiting a country on holidays, psychologically in your mind, you're not thinking of yourself as a part of that country. You're thinking of yourself as a visitor. But then moving here, obviously, I was looking to be assimilated into society. I was looking for acceptance. Being identified as minority, coming from a predominantly Black nation, was just very shocking. I think it just humbled me. Because I was like, what? What does that even mean? I come from a country where like 200 million, the entire country is 5 million, and I'm minority. What does that even mean? It was very difficult to comprehend, but that was the reality. Not just statistically, but even experientially as well. You're going to spaces and you can feel you're different. Feeling the need to code switch, feeling the need to present a certain way because the way you typically would present is unfamiliar to the majority. That can be exasperating sometimes, especially in a nation like Ireland where the Black man is still a very new concept compared to other nations where Black people have always been.
The Nigerian Pidgin English saying, Niger no dey carry last, can loosely be translated to mean Nigerians strive to finish first and must excel at whatever venture. This has become an unofficial national mantra both at home and abroad. Even UFC welterweight champion Kamaru Usman uses it as his catchphrase. Although spoken lightheartedly, it takes on a heavier meaning when a lot of sacrifices is made to get you abroad. As a Nigerian, there's an unspoken rule that failure is never an option, and this weighs heavily on many.
You subconsciously feel the need to overcompensate and to prove that you deserve to be here, to prove that being a minority doesn't mean you're lesser, doesn't mean you're not as qualified as the majority. Being Nigerian, we kind of have the can-do and must-do attitude. We just want to excel wherever we are. And also the fact that the opportunity handed to you came from a lot of toil and sweat and hard work by other people, in my case, my family, my parents. You feel the need, the obligation, the onus is on you to ensure that you justify that sacrifice being made. So all of those factors coming together, just, I didn't have a choice.
Stage 3, reintegration phase. Rejection of cultural similarities and differences through stereotyping and judgmental behaviors. The excitement of moving abroad quickly wanes, and the reality sets in. Life threw endless curveballs as Samuel navigated dealing with academics, family, culture shocks, accommodation, and employment. Then COVID-19 struck in 2020.
It was during COVID while I was looking for a job. This was after I was done with my master's. COVID just started then. I was working as a customer service staff with this customer service company. But obviously, it wasn't what I studied, or it wasn't what I was looking to. It wasn't the career path I was looking to get into to secure my residency in the country. So for 2 years while I was working in customer service, I was looking for a job in engineering, and I couldn't find a job, partly because of COVID. People were being laid off. It was difficult to get a job. The economic landscape was just very hard to navigate. There was so much uncertainty, and I didn't know what my chances were. I was an immigrant without a professional experience on Irish soil. I didn't have a stamp 4, which was like a permanent visa that would have improved my chances of getting a job. There were all of these, you know, factors stacked against me. And so it was the lowest moment emotionally, like applying for jobs for almost 2 years and constantly being rejected, constantly being told, oh, sorry, unfortunately, going through emails. And I didn't want to read anything. I was just looking for unfortunately. You know, and once I saw that, yeah, done.
As John Donne said, no man is an island. So having family and friends or a community to rely on during this journey offers great help in acclimatizing and reintegrating into this new environment. I asked Samuel how having friends in school contributed to his experience and if his school created any social avenues for the purpose of meeting new people.
I made my first friend as soon as I got here, actually. And that happened because the agency that helped us apply for our visas was where I met these friends, two of them, actually. So we already knew from Nigeria that we were all coming to study here. We are coming to the same university, the same city. So the friendship began in Nigeria. We started our community. And so when we got here, they got here before me because I got my visa got rejected, but they got their visas approved. So they came about 3 weeks before me. So they had already experienced a lot and they knew a lot before I came. So it was easy for me to navigate some of those uncertainties because they had already been through that. The school did create a lot of those very social spaces for people to connect and network and meet new friends and make new acquaintances. They had like inductions and orientations on campus. They had like a welcome party. They had all of these things. But because I came late, I never attended any of those. And those things were kind of set up in the first week of resumption. So it wasn't very helpful for those of us that came later on.
According to the World Health Organization, 1 in 8 people globally live with mental health issues, and migrants are particularly vulnerable due to exposure to various stressors all at once. So I asked if any mental health support was available to him during his educational journey.
I needed to, but I never did, because I just didn't feel safe. Part of why I needed the mental health support was because I didn't know if I felt welcome enough or if this was a safe enough space to be vulnerable. So it was even more difficult to now share that vulnerability with somebody who looked like who I didn't feel safe with, if that makes sense.
The Irish Council for International Students, ICOS, is an independent advocacy organization whose mission is to protect and enhance the rights of international students in Ireland while championing their contribution to the places they study and the communities in which they live. ICOS has 26 institutional members, including all universities and technological universities in the Republic of Ireland, and many independent third-level colleges, as well as the Union of Students in Ireland. I asked if he had encountered ICOS or was familiar with their work, as they are one of the foremost advocacy organizations catering for international students in Ireland.
I have heard about them. They're like an NGO providing support for international students. I remember, because I was very active on LinkedIn, and they were very active on LinkedIn. They did a lot, especially with regards to visas, stamp on G's. They did a lot of awareness campaigns for the industry, both for recruiters, for organizations, for students, how to navigate the labor market, you know, trying to get jobs and preparing CVs and all of that. It was really only on LinkedIn, because I don't know anywhere else that I would have heard about them. I think you wouldn't if you weren't on LinkedIn, honestly.
Stage 4, autonomy phase. Growth of personal flexibility, rising sensitivity, and the acquisition of both skill and understanding to navigate the second culture. Being here for over 5 years and having successfully transitioned from being a student to becoming an engineer and an established poet in Ireland, it was only fair to ask Samuel for some good advice for other international students.
The advice I would give is don't live in isolation. Always, always find a community. There's power in numbers. Find a support system here. Find people who are sharing the same challenges as you and share the burden. Be inquisitive, be curious, and be humble enough to ask for help at every point.
And for the people in charge of education policies in Ireland, Samuel had just one appeal.
Make the tuition cheaper. That would be my advice to whoever is in charge. Make the tuition more affordable for international students. I paid 10,500 euros for a year. That is ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
All is well that ends well, they say. But is there any part of his experience that he would love to change?
I would have secured on-campus accommodation earlier. I had to learn that the hard way. I had to pay for that the hard way. I had no idea housing crisis was a thing here. If I knew that, I would have secured accommodation long before I even applied for my visa, because I had the option to do that.
Does one ever stop feeling like a stranger? Samuel told me that he felt like Ireland was a second home now, and that he feels a sense of acceptance and belonging more than he did 5 years ago. He explained that getting to the feeling of acceptance and belonging is a journey that slowly builds up the more interaction you have with the society. So don't lock yourself up.
I feel like it's a journey, and I feel more accepted than I did, you know, 5 years ago when I moved to Ireland. And I think that sense of acceptance is something you will experience on deeper levels as you assimilate into the society a lot more, as you build deeper connections, as you understand the environment and the people you're living with. I think that is something that comes with time. I definitely feel more at home than I did 5 years ago.
Although he has found a home away from home, what comforts him when he misses home?
I do have a couple of things that make me feel at home. I think anything that reminds me of home. So it could be the ingredients my mom put in my bag when I was coming here that I would use to make soup or some local Nigerian delicacy. It would be genre music, Afro beats. It would be pictures or silly videos on my phone from moments I spent with family back home. In those moments when maybe I'm feeling overwhelmed, or those moments when I'm just feeling alone, just staring at my phone and smiling, watching silly videos of my dad making jokes or teasing my mom. Those kind of things transport me back home and remind me of where I'm coming from, so.
Stage 5. Reciprocal interdependence phase. Acceptance and enjoyment of social, psychological, and cultural differences. Samuel only went back home to Nigeria after spending 3 years in Ireland, and he says it felt like a homecoming as so much had changed both in the country and with his family as well.
I arrived 2018 and I was back home for the first time 2021, 3 years after. It felt like a homecoming. So much had changed for me and for my family as well.
To fit into a second culture, many migrants code switch. Code switching is shifting from one linguistic code to another, depending on the social context, particularly by members of minority ethnic groups, to create a sense of belonging to a larger community, particularly their host community. For migrants, this isn't only in terms of language and mannerisms. It sometimes happens with personalities too, as better explained by the Nigerian author Ijeoma Omebinyo. She says, "Here you are, too foreign for home, too foreign for here, never enough for both." So I asked Samuel how he has coped with code switching over the years.
How do I cope? I think I cope by understanding the environment I'm in, by being conscious of where I am. And by that, I mean whether I am in a social space or whether I am in the office, in a corporate setting. Who I'm speaking to, am I speaking to a mixed audience of other migrants as well? Or am I speaking to a room full of white people other than myself? You know, I'm just conscious of where I am and who I'm speaking to. And I think that kind of determines how I engage, because it's also, code switching is, it's reliant on the need to want to be understood versus expressing yourself. And in those settings, you have to understand what is priority. What's more important, to be understood or to express myself? If I'm at work, expressing myself is not as important as being understood. So I think those are the things that help me cope with code switching when I need to.
As a storyteller and an award-winning poet, Samuel Yakura's debut poetry play, The Perfect Immigrant, received funding from the Dublin Arts Council, multiple award nominations, stellar reviews as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival, and most recently, a sold-out Ireland-wide tour. I was curious about what inspired the play and what the reception was like for migrants and non-migrants alike.
What inspired my play, The Perfect Immigrant, was primarily my experience. I'm a storyteller and I felt the need to share my story. And I also think, secondly, the necessity for that story in a space that I felt wasn't as sympathetic and as understanding as it needed to be, both culturally and systematically as well. I felt it was a very necessary story, being able to tell the experience of an immigrant on Irish soil from a Nigerian's perspective was a necessary story that I hadn't seen and was such a shared experience, not just by me, but so many other people. And what I found even more interesting was that when I got to tell the story, it was so resonant with so many other people who were also migrants, because the migration story cut across culture. And there were so many people who are not Nigerian that related to the story. And it just spoke again to the necessity of stories like that being told. I think it allows those telling the story to feel heard, to feel seen, to feel understood. And it also helps those on the other side of the conversation to be sympathetic, to understand, to be educated, and to be able to have a more insightful dialogue when conversations about migration and finding home and acceptance is being discussed.
Samuel Thank you for sharing your journey with us so vulnerably, Samuel. By sharing Samuel's personal experience, I hope you have gained insight into the nuances and complexities of this rigorous yet beautiful experience that is migration. In our next episode, we will speak with an American student to learn about her experience since moving to Ireland. And here's a fun fact for the road. Did you know that in 2017, Ireland's Department of Foreign Affairs found in the last census that of the about 70 million people around the world who claim Irish roots, about 36 million are from America, and they self-identify as either Irish American or Scots-Irish Americans. My name is Blessing Khoury. Till I come your way on the second part of the 7-part docu-series, don't forget to live fully, live freely, and live truly.
This program was produced by Blessing Khoury. If you have been affected by the content of this program, support is available. Free phone the Samaritans on 116 123.